this is Sarah from The Journey and welcome to another expert special. Now, frankly, I don't think we'd be doing justice to the whole process of conception, pregnancy and early years if we didn't have a particular focus on mental health. Now, often when people talk about the process of conception and pregnancy in early years, they focus mainly on the physical side, and obviously that's a big part. However, I think there is a massive part here, particularly around anxiety, that is often not really dealt with. Now, at The Journey, we are particularly proud of our expert network, and in particular, our resident experts, one of which is the lovely Emmy Brummer, who is going to be talking to us today. Now, Emmy is very special. She is a CEO and founder herself of the Recover Clinic, specializing in women's mental health. She has over 15 years as a psychotherapist, and she's a mother of two. So she's pretty qualified to talk to us all about anxiety, specifically through conception, even dating, pregnancy, early years, birth, and everything. We cover it all. Now, most importantly, what we wanted to do as well is not only talk about the fact that it's going on and name it, which is obviously really important, but we really, really want to also focus on practical things that you can actually do. Life is inevitably going to be full of ups and downs, and frankly, there's nothing we can do about that. So what better than have tools to deal with it? So without further delay, let's get started. Okay, Emmy, thank you so much for joining us. As always, we're thrilled to have your expertise, and especially on a chat that is so, I guess, it feels very personal to me as someone who's really struggled with anxiety, and I know I am not alone on this front, so I know there'll be lots of people out there who are really, really interested in what you've got to say, so thank you for giving us the time.
Oh, it's such a
pleasure. So, subject is really anxiety, and I guess kicking it off, do you think that anxiety is increasing in our society, or do you think it's changed? Like, obviously, as somebody who sees a lot of women and a lot of kind of anxiety-based disorders, what's your view of how things have changed over time?
I mean, I can't believe how many people are suffering with anxiety. I mean, anxiety has become a diagnosis within itself, but my belief system is that anxiety is just really a symptom of something else. So that if you've got traumas or experiences from the past that you haven't processed properly, that they're going to be held in your body and it's going to manifest somehow. And anxiety, depression, stress are all symptoms of unresolved trauma in my mind. But I think what a lot of people get focused on is feeling anxious and then trying to resolve those anxiety symptoms. So constantly being in a battle to not feel anxious. So if something's worrying them, trying to make that worry go away, or trying to medicate. And the thing about anxiety is anybody can feel anxious about anything. It doesn't matter what it is. Anxiety will find a legitimate reason to feel worried and anxious about something. So it's almost futile for you to constantly kind of throw water over the things that you're feeling worried about, because there's always going to be something there.
Can relate to that.
Yeah. And if that's the case and you recognize that's not working, what are you going to do? You've got to do something different. And I think that's why I come back to it's about unresolved trauma. If you go to the root of the problem and resolve that, then everything else gets better.
So you don't think it's a case that like more of us have this kind of unresolved trauma? You just think there are more opportunities for us to feel it manifest itself maybe than in the past.
Yeah, and I think what happened historically was that we weren't so isolated. We spent a lot more time with one another. So whether it was guys meeting up in the pub, such a cliche, on a Friday night, or whether, you know, it was us going to church or girl guides or whatever it was, we got together with one another and we talked. And when we talk, we offload and we process a lot of the difficult things that we're going through in life. And what's happening now is that increasingly we're becoming more isolated and we're kind of getting these sort of faux connections because they're happening through social and online, and we're feeling like we're making connection with people, and actually we're doing that from our bedroom, from our living room, where we're sat by ourselves. And as human beings, we need physical connection with one another in order to feel well.
Yeah, it's so true. Like, you can feel like you're connecting with people on Instagram or you're sending an email, but it's just when you take a second and you step back and you actually think about the difference between sitting down physically with someone versus interacting online, it is such a massive difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So do you think when it comes to, obviously, you know, our subject about being women, and I guess the way that our roles have changed, do you think that we are grappling with a kind of, I guess it's like a new precedent in a way, where our parents were obviously, or our mothers were probably living a very different lifestyle to us. And I guess sometimes the tendency can be when you feel uncertain is to go to ground. And I guess this kind of isolation isn't really helping.
Yeah, it's not at all. And I think we're under more pressure than ever to sort of succeed. And yeah, in all areas of our lives. And I think generations ago, women were expected to have children. That was about it. They were supposed to do that successfully, and their needs weren't met for lots of other reasons. But now we're fighting for space to have careers, we're fighting for space to be heard in lots of different ways, and we're still being mothers, and we're still running the family home in lots of cases. And so I think what we're now under is this huge amount of pressure to prove to the world that we can do it all, and actually our needs get put to the bottom of the pile.
That's very true. I think you're absolutely right. The expectation is just, I guess, of ourselves more than anything else, even if, you know, you can argue what society expects us to do. But I know lots of people who, you know, feel like they need to be doing more and more and more, and they need to be perfect in kind of every area of our life. And I suppose social media doesn't really help with that whole image of perfection that's always blasted out there.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. And I think we're super tough on ourselves as well. I was speaking to a girlfriend a couple of days ago, and she was saying basically she'd just lost her shit with her son and screamed at him. And she was just really berating herself and saying what a bad mother she was. And actually the context of that was that she hadn't taken care of herself for a really long time, that actually she'd been dealing with some really difficult personal issues with zero support. And what inevitably happened was that something popped.
Yeah, of course.
And then what that did was gave her even further opportunity to say that she was a bad person and undeserving of that self-care, when actually it was the very thing she needed.
Yeah, it's so difficult, like, once you get into that kind of spiral to break out of it. And then, because, as you say, you get shame on top of it when you react in a way because you're under stress that is not a way that you would like to, then you beat yourself up more and it becomes like a really vicious circle. So speaking of vicious circles, so, you know, obviously nowadays our lifestyles have changed and many of us are having kids a lot later in life, which inherently makes it more difficult. But then against that, you know, we all, maybe because we can get an Uber in like 2 minutes, we all want things to be instant. And there's, I find, a ton of stress and anxiety around conception. And again, maybe that's overlaid with how do you fit into your career, even finding the right partner, all this kind of stuff. I mean, how would you approach this from someone in your position to, say, someone that was just struggling with a lot of these issues going through their mind?
I think we're so working on the back foot where our own happiness isn't our priority. We're so focused on this checklist that actually stopping to find out whether we're really invested in the partner that we've chosen, or whether we're taking care of ourselves in a way that feels really nurturing to us, doesn't occur to us.
Totally.
The amount of times with the clinic that I work at, a lot of the women are sort of dating and trying to kind of find those life partners, and whenever they go on dates, all they're thinking is, I really hope he likes me.
Totally. That's like the default.
And yeah, and my mantra to them is, go into every date thinking, I hope I like them. Because actually, if what you feel is that you are wonderful human being full of love and kindness waiting for somebody else to love and nurture, then your whole energy is different. And I think what we get is this fear and this desperate fear and this sense of desperateness about us that then sort of seeps out into our energy, and we feel panicked and frightened. And then inevitably we don't meet those people and we don't have those experiences. And then fertility is difficult for us because we're constantly on the back foot.
Do you think in a way that, like, the way that, like, dating is nowadays with all the apps and all the tech, and because it has made it such a much more disposable process. Yeah. Do you think that that feeds into it? Because, I mean, when I was on the dating scene, I just was always like, oh my God, you feel like you're competing with so many other people because it's so easy for someone to go and like click on an app and find someone else in like 2 minutes.
Do you know, that's so interesting though, because I think that's all perspective. Mm. So when I became single for the first time after a while, one of my girlfriends said to me, well, what apps are you going to go on? Like, how are you going to meet somebody? And I was like, well, I'm just going to meet somebody. She was like, yeah, but how? Everything has changed and now this is how people are doing it. And I was like, I that's just not me. I'm just not going to do that. And she was just so frustrated with me that I wasn't kind of going to entertain this. It didn't occur to me that I'd be competing with other people.
God, that's great. I wish I could have the same mindset.
I just felt very confident that because I'd learned how to take care of myself and that I was loving toward myself, that I would meet somebody else that would be loving toward me.
And how long did it take you to get into that mindset? Because as you say, I think it's actually a mindset that is so foreign to many women.
Yeah.
I think it's the default to be the other way.
Yeah.
So how did you actually go and change your mindset to prioritizing yourself? Because I think as women, for even if we're mothers or we're looking for a partner or we're working, as you say, it's the priority is everyone else, and our needs come like way down.
I think at some point you got to wake up. So I think it is a process of just waking up, and I think that's very much what happened to me after another bad relationship. I kind of was like, something needs to change, because otherwise these things are going to keep happening to me. And I am the common denominator. So it's me. Yeah, it's me at the heart of it. So if I want things to be different, then I have to change something within me. And I realised that I had got a well voice in me that was trying to guide me. I just didn't listen to it. I just hadn't had any confidence in it.
I think you just literally hit the nail on the head. It's having confidence in it, because we often have this like small voice which we like squash down because we're like, oh, we're not good enough. It's 100%. This, that, and the other, and we squash it.
And that voice tells you not to go on a date with that guy, tells you that that's not a good idea, and you ignore it. And so I thought, well, what will happen if I start actually listening and doing what that says? Because as far as I can see, it's generally right.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And so then from then on, any time that voice was telling me to do something, I would just trust it and listen to it. And I did do a lot of work on myself. I really tried to heal a lot of those early wounds that I had. I knew that I had them. And I did a lot of work on myself and read a huge amount. But I just felt that if anything was in conflict with my intuitive, kind of compassionate self, that I just wasn't going to do it anymore.
So basically, it's all about being compassionate with yourself and listening to that kind of inner voice that we've all got.
Yeah.
Now, overlaying this with our... because that's great. I mean, it's the ultimate goal. But, I mean, overlaying that with the impatience of our society.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us now are conditioned for, you know, instant results. And that's the same with conception as well. Yeah. Like, how do you kind of adjust your perspective and mindset on that? So whether it is prioritizing your own self-care, which obviously you need to do if you're going to have a healthy conception, and then also managing the kind of disappointment when things don't happen immediately.
I think part of it is trusting that things will happen when they're meant to, and I think that what we've got to do is sort of loosen the reins of control over everything. You know, we like to be in control of everything, we like to plan everything within an inch, and actually life isn't like that. Life is going on around us despite what we think we can control or not control. And as soon as we recognize and be humble about who we are, you know, we're just one human being and we don't control everything. In fact, the universe has got a bigger plan that we are completely unaware of. And as soon as we put our faith in something bigger than ourselves, it takes an awful lot of pressure off, actually, because you're not thinking that it's all on you to make everything happen.
God, that's so true. Do you think that this is like a modern thing that everyone tries to control everything, or is this just something that we're more aware of now?
I think we're so led to believe we can control everything.
Yeah.
And everything, we're sold so many things that tell us we can control everything. And actually, we're all just human beings, you know, and we're presented, the world is presented to us in this fractured way that we're all so different. And actually, we're not all that different. We're all just people. We're trying to connect with each other and we're aspiring to have some sort of peace and love in our lives, no matter who we are. And I really don't think there's any exception to that. But we're told to look at the differences between us. And I think that makes us, again, compare ourselves with everybody else. And I think women are particularly guilty of this. We're so hard on ourselves and looking at what everybody else is doing, where everybody else is in their journey of life, rather than thinking, actually, maybe I'm exactly where I'm meant to be.
Mm.
And actually, if I trust that, won't that be a big relief?
Yeah,
if
massively.
I can trust that I am where I'm meant to be. It was really interesting, actually. I was listening to another podcast about forgiveness. And the woman that was talking was saying, you know, think of somebody that you find it really hard to forgive. And I thought of somebody. And then I was thinking on it a bit more and I just thought, actually, do you know what? I do recognise that those difficult experiences that I had have led me to this point. And I know that's an obvious thing to say, but I have so much gratitude for that.
Yeah, I feel the same, actually.
Yeah, when I met my husband, I knew I'd met him in exactly the right moment because I knew that I cared about myself. So I knew I must have attracted somebody who would be kind to me.
That's such a good way of thinking. I mean, I've actually had a really, really similar experience to
you.
But I think it is, you know, you kind of almost have to get to that point and you have to, as you say, have enough kind of confidence to relinquish control and to have that trust, which you talk about, which is so, so, so true. Now, on that, so the path towards that, so making this kind of practical, so giving yourself compassion, doing this self-care, you know, self-care is a kind of a bit of a buzzword, and I know you are kind of quite passionate that people kind of don't necessarily use these terms properly and in the way that is accurate. So how do you perceive self-care, whether it be, you know, you're, you know, berating yourself for not knowing what's going on in your dating life professionally, or you're kind of really frustrated with not being able to conceive, or you're fearing you're being a bad mother? Like, can you give us some like practical things that maybe even you yourself do that's actually really bringing this kind of self-care and compassion to life?
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is to get mindful about how you're speaking to yourself, because when people try and make big changes, they try and make big changes, and often and that often sets us up for failure, because it's really hard to do that and really hard to keep those things going. Whereas actually, when we start to build on small things, then we put in foundations for those big changes to happen. And actually, big changes then happen without us even realizing. And I think starting to consider how you're talking to yourself is a really, really good place to start, because you can start just daily challenging yourself, whether it's because you accidentally burn something in the oven and your response is to call yourself an idiot, or whether it's because you forget your kids' shoes in their PE kit, or whatever it is that you do, to just have a compassionate response and to just recognize when you're not being compassionate, because it will probably surprise everybody how often that critical voice raises its head throughout the day in the smallest ways. And we just accept it.
Yeah, so it's being conscious of it, I suppose, in the first place.
Being conscious of it. Because if you had a physical person there next to you every day, speaking to you the way that voice does, you would just be in the most, like, acute distress.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Or
and
punch
when people,
somebody.
Yeah. And when people are in those situations, we call it domestic violence. And yet somehow it's become acceptable to us on some level that we tolerate this consistent high level of self-criticism.
Yeah, massively.
And what would happen if we just shifted that? If we just gave ourselves permission to entertain behaving differently for a while and see what happens? Because I guarantee you everything would get better.
And how long do you think it takes to kind of get into that habit? Because I suppose it's something that you start off and you have to be conscious of and you have to keep at it.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is that you weren't always like that.
I suppose as a child, you're not.
Of course not. You look in the mirror as a child and think that you are wonderful and interesting and beautiful. My eldest daughter, who's 8, will look in the mirror and go, God, Mummy, I look so pretty today.
Love that. Go her.
And it's amazing, and it's painful as well, because I know there'll come a point where she won't feel able to do that or won't think it, worse. So I think it's hard. It's important to remember you weren't always like that. That wasn't your starting point. Your starting point is to be full of love and kindness towards yourself. You've learned how to be unkind to yourself. and now you have to unlearn that behaviour. So you're right, it is a conscious process for a period of time, but the more you do it, the more it becomes an unconscious process. So I don't have to remind myself not to be unkind to myself anymore. Mm. I'm just kind to myself. It's just how I live and how I behave. But that certainly took a period of time. And I think depending on how bad it is, depends on how long it takes.
Yeah. So I suppose if it's really ingrained, you have to kind of accept that it might take you a bit of time, longer.
Yeah, and how much energy are you prepared to invest in creating that shift?
So I guess on that note, with infertility, which is something that a lot of people struggle with, I guess the default is, oh my God, this is never going to happen.
Yeah.
How would you
approach the starting point.
Yeah, I was going to say, how would you, say, for example, I was really struggling with infertility and the kind of mental anguish around that, and on this subject of self-care, how would you advise me to really kind of change my mindset on this?
To stop focusing on what you're scared of. Because I think when we focus on what we don't want, then that becomes our reality and it becomes our world, because we notice and give our attention to everything that we're frightened of. As soon as we focus our intention on what we want and we become kind to ourselves, then that's when miracles happen. There's plenty of examples of people conceiving against all odds because they believed they could.
Totally.
And that's the difference. Mm. And the doctors can't quite explain why. And there's many examples of people healing their bodies in ways that nobody could anticipate because they thought about it in a certain way. And I think when women in their sort of late 30s and 40s start thinking about having babies, their immediate thought is, this is going to be difficult. And the world responds by going, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
You set yourself up immediately for that. Yeah. I think that's so true. And so again, it's all about this like mindset shift, because as you say, I mean, there's so much, you know, medicine and science is so clever in so many ways, but there is still this mystery and there is the mind-body connection, which is actually why at The Journey we are so passionate about including the whole mental aspect, because even on a physiological level, if you are constantly talking to yourself like crap, your stress levels will go up, and it has a tangible effect on all of your hormones, and it creates this imbalance in many, many ways. Mm-hmm. And I think, as you say, if you start talking to yourself in a different way, then it makes a massive difference. Now, what happens, I was talking of lack of control, as we were talking about earlier. Mm. Now, the next step is, hooray, you get pregnant.
Yeah.
A lot of people then struggle with massive anxiety, and it's again anxiety around, is the baby going to be healthy? Am I doing things in the right way? I mean, am I working too hard? Am I stressed? And there's the classic irony of being stressed because you're stressed about being stressed. And so you make yourself more stressed.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of change, and some people struggle with their physical change in their body. So what would you say to somebody that is struggling from an anxiety perspective being pregnant?
I think what people get drawn into, and it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, is they get drawn into trying to respond to the anxiety. So I'm worried about this and therefore I'm going to do that. I'm worried about this and therefore I'm going to do that. And actually the problem is your anxiety. And that's the bit you need to address. Because if you address that, everything else will get better. Because we can't control everything. And actually what it's going to be is going to be. But what you can do is change your experience of everything. So if you're noticing that you're really highly anxious and you're focusing and catastrophizing on what could go wrong, most people have healthy babies.
Yeah.
You know? So if you notice you're that person, then you need to go and figure out how to manage your anxiety, whether that's going working with a therapist, whether that's meditating. Every single person that comes into our clinic is taught how to meditate.
This is a really important thing. And I think that it's something, well, I can speak from experience. Meditation is one of these things that I know I should do. And I know I should do it because I really struggle to do it.
Yeah.
Which probably means I need it more. So
So
how do you, say for example, someone had never meditated before and wanted to approach it, but had a kind of busy mind and found it difficult. As somebody who, you know, who does it a lot in your own clinic, how would you approach it?
I would say to some, again, small changes rather than setting yourself up for the big stuff. Because if you're not somebody that's ever meditated before, it's actually really hard to do. And that's why we call it meditation practice, because it takes practice and we have to keep doing it. So one of the things that I do is when I'm coming into work, I listen to a 10 minute meditation on the train on the way in. And I do that before I start. Yeah, or music, whatever I want. Whatever's going to work for you, because some people find that really guided meditations are really helpful for them. Some people find that listening to like some Sanskrit music is really helpful to them. Play around and see what actually works, because just because somebody else finds something helpful doesn't mean you will.
Totally.
So give yourself permission to just explore and be creative about it and think about what's going to work for you. Listening to a beautiful piece of music or sitting out and looking at a beautiful sunset probably puts you in a meditative state. You just didn't realise that it did.
That's the thing I was going to ask you. So there's this whole thing, meditation versus mindfulness versus, again, this, and it's a classic way of thinking about it in the wrong way, but it's like, what are you supposed to feel when you're meditating? Because I think for me personally, I'm trying to meditate, I'm like, am I doing this right? Which is obviously completely the wrong way of like approaching it.
I don't think it's wrong at all. I think what you can do in that moment is just notice how hypervigilant you are about your experience. So being mindful is going, God, wow, I'm thinking a lot about this.
Okay,
so I'm noticing that I'm really mindful about whether I'm doing this correctly. That's a thing for me, actually, that things need to be correct all the time.
Yeah, type A alert. So, okay.
It's just being compassionate and going, yeah, this was going to be a bit tricky. So this might going to take, you know, this might take a bit of time, or this isn't really working for me.
So you started off kind of, when you first started your meditative practice, you started off very gently, very slow. How did you incorporate that into your daily life? So it was at the very beginning, was it just, as you say, kind of listening to a bit of music, listening to whatever it was that made you feel like you were in a more relaxed state?
Yeah, I tried to do something consistently because I recognised from a bit of trial and error that the more I did it, the easier it was.
There's this practice thing,
but I gave myself permission to do it wherever I was. So if I had got a really busy schedule and I was finding it really hard to prioritise sitting in a dark room for 20 minutes, whatever it was, that I didn't make it into a chore. That's why my little 10-minute, 20-minute meditation on the train is so lovely to me, because I'm just there by myself. Yeah, and I don't have to do anything, and it really works for me. But equally, if I was away on holiday and I had more time and space, then I would maybe spend more time meditating. I just give myself permission to give myself what I need, as long as I'm constantly nurturing my practice. So I think first step is just not putting loads of pressure on yourself and creating rules about what you have to do. Make sure you're comfortable, make sure it's something you're actually enjoying doing, because otherwise you're just setting yourself up for failure.
So I think it's experimenting with what you actually find is enjoyable. And so you think that that's something that has been helpful in your experience with your clinic?
I know it's helpful, and statistically it reduces anxiety by like 90% or something crazy. Wow. Yeah.
So that would be your top tip if you're pregnant and you're experiencing a lot of anxiety, that would be the number one.
Start kind doing of that, yeah.
And you think that that will help people learn to relinquish a bit of that control that
I
we talked
so,
about?
I think so, but stop feeding the neurosis. Stop seeking out things. I always call this like emotional self-harming, emotional cutting, like when you're going onto websites or watching programs that are going to amplify your anxiety. Stop doing it, because you can control that.
So stop seeking out negativity, basically. Being conscious of that, and instead seek positivity.
Exactly.
And that makes sense.
Surround yourself by what you want, not what you don't want.
So coming back to birth and this whole experience that you have of lack of control, catastrophizing, it's the anxiety around it, and it's one of those things where it's probably, especially if it's your first time around, that kind of fear can really set in. And lots of people get proper anxiety in the lead up.
Yeah.
I mean, I have full respect to people who are like super zen and can have the home birth and do really. But a lot of people, and especially in our kind of control freak times / me, you know, it's something that kind of can fill you with dread, fear, all kinds of emotions. It's an emotional time anyway, because you're full of hormones as it is.
Yeah.
So how would you really deal with that?
I think if you find that that energy is building up in you and you're getting scared, then you need to get help. And again, not seeking out things that are going to make you feel worse. So it's like all of this leads back to you getting help and support and being kind to yourself, because it is an experience you're going to have very limited control over. But there will be things that you can do to give you a sense of control. So having sitting down with a doula, sitting down with a midwife, having a birth plan will help you feel more in control of what's happening to you, whether that's as simple as choosing what music you're going to have on, deciding whether the lights are going to be on. Thinking about the things you have got control over will make you feel a bit better. But if you do find your anxieties rising, then that's the problem, not the fact that you're about to have a baby.
So speaking of this, because obviously it's come up quite a lot, is dealing with the kind of underlying or previous kind of issues or trauma that have happened that then manifest themselves. And obviously, you know, meditation, changing the way you speak to yourself. But what happens if you feel like it goes deeper than that? How do you actually actively seek out help?
Well, I mean, there are resources on your website to direct people if they feel like they want further support. But I think seeking help from a professional is the best place to go. Speaking to a GP, I don't know necessarily what the resources are. It really depends on whereabouts you live in the country. But go and seek out a therapist if you can. Or a local doula, because they're amazing at supporting people through that process. But what we know is that if people have got unprocessed trauma, it's going to come up when you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Because that's when you feel vulnerable, and it's when you're, you know, just so hyper aware of your own safety. So old trauma does come up during that point. And if you know it's already there and you know you're planning on trying to get pregnant, then do the work now. Don't wait for those things to come up. Don't wait for yourself to be in a place of crisis. Address it now, because it's going to change your entire experience.
You're absolutely right. And I suppose that finally feeds into my last question, which is the dreaded mum guilt. And I think it probably ties into everything that you've just said. But you know, when you have a child, this whole new world of emotion opens up. And as you say, if you're not kind of in a position where you've dealt with maybe old traumas and you're not speaking to yourself in the right way, it can be this perfect storm of feeling like you're such a crap parent all the time. And fact is like the vast majority of people try and do their best all the time. But it's funny how many of us have these kind of effectively really irrational thoughts about it. So as a mum yourself, how do you deal with this?
I think I'm super aware if I have any thoughts that are not particularly kind or compassionate, that they aren't kind and compassionate for a start. Like, I'm able to separate myself from them. My immediate response is, how can I take better care of myself? Because if I'm not being kind to myself, then there's something I'm not doing that I could be doing to be a bit nicer to myself.
So when you say, because you've mentioned this a couple of times, so when you say taking better care of yourself, prioritizing your self-care, so obviously it's the way you talk about to yourself.
Yeah.
And other things that you yourself do in order to take care of yourself.
Yeah, 100%. So I spend loads of time outdoors. I find like being in nature and being outside just really cathartic, really healing for me, really helps me ground myself and just not get drawn into the noise so much by being outdoors. I make sure that I see my best friend often. That's become increasingly more important as we've both got busier and older and had kids. She's like part of my life source. Like, seeing her just makes me feel good. And I make sure I spend time with my husband, like real time. We go on dates, and I think of like nurturing things for us to do as a couple, because my role as his wife and my role as a mother are no more or less important than one another to me, and I need to nurture both of them. And the other thing I would say to mums is, because they're often armed with all of these books and literature, and I'm like, they're only people's opinions. That's all they are. We give all these other people all this power, and actually intuitively we often know
trust
what's
your
wrong.
Instinct.
Yeah.
So it's basically prioritizing yourself.
Yeah.
And it's, again, shifting this mindset to actually, as opposed to you being the bottom of the pile, realizing that if you put yourself much higher up, then you're going to feel a lot better and everything will be more likely to fall into place.
100%. And we're in a better position to care for those that we love.
Yeah.
As soon as we love ourselves.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. This has been
such a pleasure.
I feel like I've had a therapy session now. I feel amazing. Well, what we'll do is we'll put all of Emmy's details up on the site, including her own clinic, which she's CEO of, and I'm sitting here right now, and it's amazing, may I just say. And once again, thanks so much.
That's
I think that
pleasure.
This is something that speaks to so many people, and hopefully it could be helpful.
Thanks for having me.